This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Okay. Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I have a tape of an interview I did with the winner of the Patsy Award. And so we're going to go straight into that. And then at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to a poet, Kim Dower. I just love her work, and she's been on the program before. And as all of you know, I always say one of the best ways for you to learn to be a better writer is to read poetry. So first we'll do the interview that I had with Gabrielle St. George, the winner of the Patsy Award. And here we go. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper an author who won the Patsy Award. Ah, this is so exciting. Gabrielle St. George, I am so happy that you are on Joy on Paper today, all the way from Canada. So this makes the Patsy Award an international award.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you for having me. But most of all, thank you for this award. Literally, I'm pretty sure this has been the highlight of my publishing experience to date. I just am over the moon and in shock, but I'm so appreciative. Thank you so much. This is so fun.
You know, sometimes books come along just at the right time, because when I read How to Murder a Marriage, the Ex-Whisperer Files book number one, I was so happy because, you know, we went through this horrible pandemic-y time. And it was exhausting for me because I was getting so many books that just depressed me. I just couldn't take it anymore. And then I got this book, and I love the cover. They did a beautiful job on this cover. It is so distinctive. And I kept it right there on the top. I said, I have to read this book. Went through several other books before I got to yours. And then I sat down, and it starts with a list. My listeners, I've talked about it before, that I love books with lists. And I started reading it, and I couldn't stop. I was happy that, you know, after we talked, that so many of my listeners, you know, sent me emails. They all said, oh, Patsy, you sounded so happy. So I want to really thank you so much for the book, and thank you for just being such a wonderful guest on Joy on Paper.
Oh, that's just, I'm so grateful. That's just such a beautiful tribute. But I think that's really the highest calling when your work is entertainment, you know, to make people feel good. And throughout the pandemic, I mean, I had to take a news break. You know, it's hard. It gets so heavy. And now, I mean, it's worse now. You know, the world is so heavy. But just for mental health, emotional health, we need sometimes just to laugh or escape, to be entertained. And I think that's the highest calling of an entertainer, whether you're an actor, stand-up comic, artist, writer, musician, to make people feel good. That's my take on it.
Well, you certainly made me feel good the day that I read it, and I know that many of my listeners have also read the book and enjoyed it and have said the exact same thing. We needed a break. It's just too overwhelming. Having this sort of respite where you think about something else, for me, of course, just thinking about Canada relaxes me. And I think that that happens also for many Americans, you know, who loved going to Canada when we could go to Canada. It brings back so many fond memories that just thinking about you and thinking about the book, and it really, really served its purpose. And I was so happy that I was able to give you this award. And then really the wonderful thing was that Tasha Alexander was on the program with her husband, Andrew Grant, and they co-hosted the program with me and presented you with the award.
That was amazing. I mean, that's just such high-level artists there. You know, it's overwhelming, really. I am thrilled. You just, no matter what I tell you here with my words, it cannot convey how thrilled and over the moon I am with this award. It's just unbelievable.
Well, you know, we need books that really do give us this attitude of a woman with gumption, you know, a woman who, you know, gets out there and is living a life that, you know, she wants.
Agreed. Especially in my opinion, or my personal mission now, is an elder woman, a mature woman, let's just say over 50, which even 50 sounds young to a lot of us now, but over 50. Malice Domestic, the conference, is next week, and I'm going, and they've put me on a panel. They actually have me moderating a panel, and it's called Not Her First Rodeo. And so it's about mature sleuths, and I'm moderating with five authors who are, you know, major authors whose sleuths are a little long in the tooth. And the point is that it's so important. Like, women, mature women, are not represented adequately in media, in any forms of media. And we actually have more buying power than any other age group, and more buying power than males in our age group. And we read a lot of books. And so many elder females want to see themselves represented in media. And I want to do that, and I want to encourage other writers and filmmakers and any other artists to do the same.
The most famous woman sleuth, of course, is Miss Marple. And so I think it's great that you've written this book to really celebrate this idea that women have the gumption and will get out there and do some sleuthing.
So, I mean, that's the differentiate point, is that we have elder female sleuths, like all the Agatha Christie, Miss Marple, all these kinds of things, loads of them, and so many cozies have older females as their protagonists, but they fall into group. They have lots of cats, they're bakers, they're, you know, caterers, they're all kinds of different jobs. They're lawyers, they're tattoo artists, all kinds of things, but they're not realistic, and that is okay. But some of us want to read a book about older women, let's say mature women, who actually do drink, smoke, swear, have sex, do the kinds of things that many mature women are still doing. Like, we didn't just like throw in the towel on everything except, you know, feeding our cats once we turn 50. So I think that's where we're lacking, the more realistic portrayal, but still fun and entertaining, but more relatable, I would say, to many of us.
Well, as I said when we presented the award to you, that humor is what got me. I need a book with some humor in it, and you do that in spades.
Oh, that's so nice. And I've always felt humor is one of the most difficult things to do, whether, like, even a stand-up comic, I'm in awe of them. But, you know, comedic actors are far fewer than dramatic actors. It's harder to do. And same with writing. And I think if one can write comedy, one should write comedy, because there's not that many people who do it well. And really necessary in our world, like you're saying. We need a break sometimes. And right now, if I'm not thinking about some of the horrific world events going on, I feel guilty. If I forget about people suffering in Eastern Europe right now, I feel guilty. But that's not okay either. We still need to, you know, fill up our well.
Exactly. We didn't have a chance to talk about a little bit about your background and how you got into writing novels. Because you were in television before.
I was, yeah. I was in television and wrote some feature film scripts. They were optioned in Hollywood, and you know, you've been there. That doesn't mean they get made. And I'd say, I'm going to guess 98% of the scripts options don't get made into film. It's just the way the business works. But I feel like writing screenplays and writing novels are two different languages. They don't intersect really almost anywhere in my mind.
As you said, I was also in Hollywood and had three of my spec scripts optioned. And you're right. One of the things that I did do was I was assigned to take several novels. I did about four or five, where I wrote a script based on a novel. So that's an interesting experience. I think it teaches you a lot when you're a script writer of how few words in a book actually ever get on screen.
I think that's why so many people who love a particular book are disappointed in the film. That they don't, even the best translation is never a perfect translation of a book. You know, as you would know with your professional experience, writing, when you write a screenplay, nothing can be on to appear on screen. Nothing. If there's something written in a screenplay that you can't translate onto the film, it's got to go. And that's one of the things that are so different in writing a novel is just the inner monologue. You can write what characters are thinking. And I love that. And I think that's why I wrote these mysteries in the first person, because I could be in her head all the time. And that's just the opposite of film writing.
When I was in Hollywood, I was very hopeful. You know, I was very young and I was very hopeful. When you get optioned, and in those days you got optioned and you got paid, actually. Nowadays, I understand they're optioning people all over the place, but they don't actually give them money. So when I was there, we got money, and one of my scripts was optioned 3 times, and each time I got money. So that was nice. But they went into turnaround like yours. And so it amused me when I read on your Amazon blurb that you moon dance. And I thought, well, you know, turnaround and moon dancing go together. So maybe that's why you moon dance. We turn around, and we're hoping under the moon that someday somebody will come along. And you know, if it really captured a studio, in my case, there must be a reason for it. So you still live in hope even long time after, you know, you're out of the business.
Yeah, it's a weird phenomenon, isn't it? You just keep have your fingers crossed. There's been a couple of companies approach me about the rights to this How to Murder a Marriage, which is exciting. Again, you know, these things can drag on for years and often don't materialize. But I'm hopeful right now. We've had a couple of good meetings, and that's very exciting. But as my agent used to tell me, I used to be so upset, as you would have been and any writer would be, when the option expires or goes in a turnaround or this is sitting on someone's shelf for those years, nothing happening. And my agent would just say, well, you can cry all the way to the bank. It's like you say, you get paid something anyway, but that's not what we want. You know, we want to see it made into a film. But them's the breaks, right, in Hollywood.
Well, they are. But, you know, I think perhaps with this one, with the Ex-Whisperer Files, you've hit the right mark. There's an audience for it. You know, and I hate to say that, you know, one of the things, it's difficult to sell books. It's hard to sell books. You have to really get out there and do a lot of work to sell books. Yet if you have just one movie made of one of your books, people will then pay attention and read your books.
True. It's like Reese Witherspoon or Oprah, you know, giving a thumbs up on a book. The book hits the bestseller list overnight.
Yeah.
That kind of clout that you need, really.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of clout I'm hoping to get with the Patsy Award, because, and I think you saw I did a page for you on my website. People can go and listen to the presentation by Tasha Alexander. And I say there, hello, Hollywood, you know, pay attention, because I get this feeling when I'm reading a book. I always know, you know, having this experience of writing a screenplay, when I'm reading a book, and if it turns into a film in my head where I absolutely forget that I'm reading a book and I see it all happening in my head, this is a book that Hollywood should pay attention to, because heaven knows they need some new property. If anybody makes one more Little Women or Pride and Prejudice, I will really go crazy.
Yeah, let's stop regurgitating the old stuff. And I get it, but it's only because there's a lack of stories, or they believe there's a lack of stories, so they go back to remakes.
Exactly, and there's not a lack of stories or lack of original ideas or lack of wonderful characters, like in this case, Gina, who any actress would love to play her. This would be a plum part.
Yeah, it's true. I have had a couple of actresses up here in Canada, like kind of our top major actresses, and they've requested the book and they love it. And one of them is 60. She's extremely vibrant. She's married to one of our kind of Canadian icons, and she's all over the world doing everything. And She's a bit old for it. And she's like, I would just give a limb to play this role.
She can play young.
I know.
You know, they can play young. That's 60 is not, you know, for an actress, they can easily play 40. So
absolutely. But there's still the prejudice with the, you know, used to be the networks, studios, and now it's more the streaming companies, Netflix, etc. And there's still a huge prejudice. They deal with it all the time.
Oh, I know. I worked with several actresses who did the same thing. You know, I wrote a script for Debbie Reynolds, and they were when it first happened. When I first, you know, we got the script out. This was, of course, in 2008. We had the script out. We got a tax credit here, $5 million tax credit for the state of Florida to shoot the film here. But they were still, you know, she's so old. They kept saying, I said, she can do it. Believe me, she can do it. You know, she can run around you crazy people. In 2008, she was so vibrant. But there is that prejudice.
Absolutely. And someone like Debbie Reynolds, iconic, of course, there'd be a sector of the population that would go to the film just because it was Debbie Reynolds.
Exactly.
But, yeah, the 30-year-old saying yes in the studios. They don't see it that way. We know better.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you've ever... Well, I'm sure you've been in some of those meetings with the kids.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was in one where I've written a script. I've written a television series, practically finished 12 episodes myself. And it's about the F-105 Warriors, who, of course, were in Operation Rolling Thunder during the Vietnam War. And many of them were shot down and spent 4, 5, 8 years in Hanoi Hilton. And I wrote the script. And, of course, it's about Vietnam. And I did one of those meetings, took a meeting, went all the way out to Hollywood. And we had moved up the chain. And one of these kids looked up from the big conference table and said, is this war between World War II and that Korean thing, or is it after that Korean thing?
Oh, no.
You know, oh, boy. And he was, he graduated from Ivy League college, but he had Italian loafers with no socks, and so he looked really good. He looked really good.
Unfortunately, he's one of the decision makers. But that's the thing. William Goldman, you know, one of our most famous screenwriters ever, in his book, he said that the most profound truth in Hollywood is that, quote, nobody knows anything. That is the truth.
Well, you know, that's why I'm on the west coast of Florida, and you're up there in Canada, but you have connections up there, and you have wonderful actors and wonderful film companies up in Canada.
We have a good industry, and I mean, obviously, everything was shut down with COVID, so I think, you know, things did continue, but limped along, and only now, our mandates have only been dropped in the last couple of weeks, so hopefully things will get rolling again, and lots of industries, but obviously including film and television for sure. And you know, one of the things you had asked before about, do I do character studies? And I don't, but a producer filmmaker had told me many years ago, and it made sense to me, that writers are basically just shy actors, you know, introverted actors. We're not comfortable to get up on stage, and so we write these characters. And I think it's like I embody each character when I write that role. And I think it's a lot like an actor stepping into the embodiment of whatever, you know, character they're playing in a film or play or screenplay. And I think that's an interesting thing, but we're basically just shy actors. So that's how we create.
Well, it's true. And I am that way. But I had those wonderful opportunity to actually get on stage one time, and I turned out to be such a ham. It was really funny, because there was no reason I was in that play except that my boys were in this play, so I was going to rehearsal all the time. I was always there every day after day. It was Fiddler on the Roof. After a few weeks of rehearsal, my husband was sitting there one day, and they said, asked him if he would like to be in, because they needed somebody to play the village priest and wear that tall hat, you know? My husband never acted, And he got on stage, and after a week of rehearsal, I mean, he was really good. My boys were really good. And I'm there in the audience, you know, taking pictures. And for some strange reason, they needed a villager woman. Well, I jumped on that, not telling them that I had never been on stage, didn't know how to dance, and didn't know how to sing. And they were all professional dancers in Fiddler on the Roof. But I'll tell you, I was the most enthusiastic of all the women. And I loved every minute of it. And I thought, you're right. Looking back on it, I wish taking that chance when I was young and size five, you know, it would have been really nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much overlap. Just being a creative. You know,
it is. Well, of course, you know, when they film this, and I believe they're going to film this. Of course, I'm not sure if they're going to want to wait. You see, if it's streaming, they'll want you to have more books under your belt. But I'm sure, is book two coming out soon?
Yeah, book two, How to Kill a Kingpin, which also starts with a list, Patsy. All these ones start with a list. That list is top 10 reasons to avoid your high school reunion.
Oh.
And reason number 10 being, someone could get murdered and you may be next. It is supposed to come out in July, but all the ducks are not in a row.
And you're working on book three?
About to start. May 1st, I'll start writing book three, which is How to Bury a Billionaire.
I love these titles. You know, it's they're catchy, and then you need that with great covers. The publisher did a great job with this cover. Mm-hmm. Made a distinctive look for you. You know, you will maybe get a bit part in the film when they make it.
You get up here and you be in it with me.
Oh,
we'll do it together.
I will. What scene could we be in? We need a drinking scene. A drinking part is perfect for me.
Almost all the scenes in my book, someone is drinking.
Yeah, exactly. So I can fit in there. Yeah, I'm going to come up to Canada then I can go fishing. I just, again, want to thank you so much for being a guest on Joy on Paper, and I'm so happy that we were able to give you this award, because you've given me some happiness, you've given my listeners some moments of happiness, and that's important.
Again, I don't know how to thank you, Patsy. I am so beyond honored and ecstatic, and again, still like, surprised. What? Really? Me? But I am just so grateful, and again, just honored. And you are just a gem. I can't wait to have a drink with you and watch the sunset up here, girl.
Okay. Well, it's been a joy to talk to you again. As soon as you have a release date for the new book, you will be on the program, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Thrilled to be. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you. The entire pleasure was mine and the honor. Thank
okay,
you.
One more time. Just give your web page and wherever you want people to find you.
I'm on Instagram and Facebook under Gabrielle St. George, and my website is my name, GabrielleSt.George.com.
Okay, and I'm going to talk to you soon, and keep writing.
Thank you, Patsy. Take good care, and bye, listeners. Everyone be safe.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Kim Dower, the author of a new book of poetry called I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom. It is always so wonderful to talk to Kim. She is known as Kim from L.A. and a famous publicist out there in Hollywoodland. But I want to really say that for me, I always think of her as a poet, because not only was she the city poet laureate of West Hollywood, she fills my life with poetry. Hi, Kim.
Hey, Patsy. How are you today? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, yeah, and it's really early over there.
So we're awake.
That's it. Well, I'm holding this lovely book in my hand. It's pink, and it's got a nice little cover. And as I said, the name of the book is I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom. I was very touched when I got the book and read it. And let's talk about why you wrote this book and about the dedication. And I hope that you're planning to read some of these great poems for me, because there are so many that I love.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. You know, this is a true labor of love. This book is a culmination of many years of the poems I've written about being a mother and having a mother. And they're poems that I hope and believe that many people can connect with and relate to. And it's coming up for Mother's Day, so my vision was to have a book that we could have for Mother's Day for ourselves, to our mothers, for our daughters, that would be able to connect us to the experience that so many of us have had.
And it certainly does. I have been talking to people lately about how to become a better writer, and I always tell them one of the ways to become a better writer is to read poetry, because it is always so amazing to me how a poet just knows words and can take any subject, and you can take any subject and write a poem that is remarkable, that really reminds people of events or opens their eyes, whether it's writing about sardines or whatever. I just love your work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I try to, when I sit down to write a poem, I don't say it's going to be about this or this will happen. A lot of the things in my poems are surprises, even to myself. I don't see them coming. And that's the joy of poetry. You know, your joy on paper, it's my joy on paper, is the surprise that happens while a poem is being written. Sometimes it feels like they come through me. You know, that's what Anne Sexton used to say, that the poems came through her from God. And, you know, I'm not a religious person, and yet I understand that feeling of the poem suddenly going through me.
Well, I felt that the first time I read your book, Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave. As I was reading that, I was so moved by how you just captured moments in time, simple moments in time, and really touched my soul with them. And that's why I know that it was it won the 2020 Independent Publishers Book Award, and it deserved it because it is wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a great honor, a very exciting. And yeah, when my poems touch people and they tell me about it, or they had the same experience, or they were moved, that's my greatest moment in life, really. To be able to touch people with the work is a great thing. So I'm so happy that you've been moved by my poems.
Well, let's start. I'm going to have you read a couple, but I hope that you've selected the ones that you want to read. So what do you want to start with?
Well, you know, I thought I'd read the title poem, "I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom." And today is, Thursday, so we're coming up on the big holiday weekend. We've got Passover on Saturday, and we've got Easter Sunday on Sunday. And this is a poem about that holiday, those holidays.
Okay.
"I wore this dress today for you, Mom. Breezy, floral, dancing with color, soft, silky flows as I walk. Easter Sunday, and you always liked to get dressed, go for brunch. Maybe there's a good movie playing somewhere. Wrong religion, we were not churchgoers, but New Yorkers who understood the value of a parade down Fifth Avenue. Bonnets in lavender, powder blues, pinks, hues of spring, the hope it would bring. We had no religion, but we did have Noodlekugel, grandparents, dads, who could fix fans, reach the china on the top shelf, carve the turkey. That time has passed. You were the last to go, Mom, and I still feel bad I never got dressed up for you like you wanted me to. I had things to do. But today in L.A., hot, the way you liked it, those little birds you loved to see flitting from tree to tree, just saw one, a twig in its mouth, preparing a bed for its baby, might still be an egg. I wish you were here. I've got a closet filled with dresses. I need to show you."
Oh, it brings tears to my eyes, and I'm always so moved by your poetry. In, you know, a page... just one page, you say so much, and you paint a picture, which is what a true artist does.
Well, thank you. We all have our memories of these holidays, and particularly things we wished we had done for our mothers. When they pass, a lot of those memories come back very strong, and we see them differently. We are able to look at our lives differently when those people we love have died. It's an interesting thing what happens. The relationship can continue in a different way.
Well, I know that I always love that song, "In Your Easter Bonnet."
Yeah.
It's just the minute, of course, I read this poem, that came to my head, and I love the image of it and how you recreated it with just a few lines.
Well, thank you. Is there a poem that you wanted me to read? I mean, I can choose another, but I'm wondering if there's something that you'd like me to read.
Well, why don't you select the next one, too? So,
well,
you know, you've probably been thinking about it, and it's important to know what ones really, really mean a great deal to you.
Well, I'll read a poem. You know, this book has poems a lot, also about my grandmother, who I called Nana, and she was extremely important in my life, and it's interesting to see how my mother related to her mother and her mother to me. You know, it's a beautiful thing, the grandmother, the mother, and the child. And this is in her honor and in honor of all people in Ukraine. My grandmother came from Russia, which was then called Russia, now Ukraine. And this is for Nana. It's called Dubonnet. My grandmother would sip a juice glass of Dubonnet, dark purplish color, red, the color of her identical twin sister's lips, the one who stayed behind in Russia, every night as she prepared the roast, Mike Douglas blasting on the television, my grandfather snoring, the apartment a swirl of garlic, chicken fat, boiled secrets, longing, flooding the rooms like sunlight. Once she offered me a taste. Some people like it with a twist of lemon, but I like it plain. I was 7. My tongue burned through the sweetness. I floated into the next room without moving. I would dress up in her black cloth cape, sequined ladybug pin, clump around in her tiny pumps. She was the size of Thumbelina. I remember the warm baths, splashes of Jean Nate, the pink Chanel bathrobe, photo of them as girls hanging in the dark hallway. My grandmother told me her name just once, Tanya. This identical her, living on the other side of the world, another Nana, saying goodnight to another me.
Oh, you know, that's one of the things right now we are all thinking about the Ukraine so much. It's so strange. People never, you know, most people didn't even know where it was. And of course, I've always been interested in that area of the world, going back to some of my research. And so now that we hear about it and we see these pictures, I would imagine that a poet's mind just goes wild with images.
Yeah, especially, you know, all my ancestors come from that part of the world, and probably some of them are there. I don't know them, but it certainly connects us all in a very tragic way. So yeah, so you know, I'll read another poem that's not so sad.
Yeah, let's do.
You know, I get a lot of my ideas from headlines in the news. Actually, we hear about prompts that poets use. And there are prompts that come from just my own emotions. You know, like, I wore this dress today for you, Mom, was very much from my heart. And Dubonnet was a tribute to my grandmother. But there are poems that come, I'll read a headline, and I'll think, oh, my goodness, I have to write this poem. So I used to love James Garner. I don't know if your listeners will remember him. But he was a big favorite of mine. And one day I opened the Los Angeles Times, and there was a big headline that James Garner had died. So I wrote a tribute called Goodbye to James Garner. Fans loved him as Rockford, maverick, a man's man, had your back, cool, did the right thing. I loved him for being Doris Day's husband in a movie I cut class to see. Fifth grade, played at the Riviera, only old men and me during the day. I went alone, told no one, but I had a gigantic crush on him. He was an OB-GYN. She was a mom. Marriage in jeopardy. Couples in movies stayed together in the 60s. While out there, it was all falling apart. Women poised to flip their lives, months away from marching into a world of miniskirts, riots, shame, pillbox hats, flinging our boxy pink suit jackets and pumps into the sunset. Not even James Garner could have saved us. And this week, now more unrest, more wars unfolding, I'm stuck on the headline, James Garner dead. When I was 10, I needed a man I could count on, even one holding aces and eights.
Oh, I love that poem. That was one of the ones actually I was going to select, because I've always thought of him as with this strength, and I was really happy when I read it. It's sort of like when you conjure up these names and you bring these names that people don't, you know, when I got Tyrone Powers, your Tyrone Powers book, it brought so many memories of all the films over the years that I had seen him. And so it was just the images that poetry can bring to mind are so amazing, aren't they?
They are amazing. You know, listen, this is the beauty of a good poem, that it makes you see things in a way that you haven't seen them. I mean, a lot of poets write about nothing. It's just what we see at that moment. It's like taking a minute and stretching it out and putting whatever we can into that moment. It's something nobody really takes the time to do. And writing poems and reading them helps us to see this really in action, you know.
Well, poetry over the years, you know, I was of that era where people were still reading poetry. I know that I enjoyed poetry since I was young. And in the olden days, people read poetry out loud to each other, which I think is so wonderful. And I continued that, actually, with my husband. My husband didn't really know any poetry when I met him, English poetry. And so one of the things that I did is I made a point of reading out loud these poems to him, famous poems, and he was always so thrilled with it and loved the sound of how I would, you know, be dramatic at points. And I think more and more people should do that. Just turn off the streaming, all those little squares that don't do anything for your mind, and read poetry to each other. It's really amazing how much fun you get out of it.
Absolutely. And you need to read a poem aloud, because it's, you hear the music when you read it aloud, and it feels great, you know, on your lips and in your mouth to read a poem. It really makes a huge difference from reading it just on the page to reading it aloud.
Now, when you were the City Poet Laureate, and I think that lasted for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, it was two wonderful years, yes.
So did that give you an opportunity to get out there and read poetry to people?
Yeah, you know, I was responsible for putting together a lot of different events and celebrations and projects, and we had some wonderful events with poets from, you know, around the city. And it also gave me an opportunity to go into the schools and work with fourth and fifth graders, which is extraordinary. The kinds of things that that they write are just amazing, because they're not afraid, and they have beautiful imaginations. And you just give them a prompt and let them take off, and the things they come up with are remarkable. So I had a chance to work with young children. We put a great event together about Route 66, because, you know, Route 66 runs through Santa Monica Boulevard out here, right through West Hollywood. And so we had a big celebration of poets who grew up here writing about the Sunset Strip and Route 66, and a lot of wonderful events.
Well, I think that's fantastic. What I really do love with children, if you just give them a piece of paper and let them run wild writing and exactly that, telling everything that's in their heads, it is so much fun. I used to do that at Sunday school quite often. It was funny. I would be in the office, and every once in a while they'd send me a kid who wasn't behaving in class.
Right.
And the first thing I do, he said, "Well, you know what the heck? Let's have some fun." And I'd give him paper and I'd say, "Oh, just write something for me." And the things that I got from these kids were so amazing,
yeah,
so beautiful. I remember one child wrote me, you know, and he this is what he wrote. And he was considered, you know, not the best student in the world. But he sat down and he wrote a little sort of a half poetry, half prose story that was so remarkable. I still hold it next to my writing desk because I look at it every once in a while and say, what a wonderful thing a child can do. So I think that what you did here working with children was fantastic.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And, you know, I think about it a lot, and I think that I definitely want to do it in my future. It's, you know, I love teaching. I teach a workshop for UCLA Extension, a writing workshop, and I teach one for Antioch University, and I teach one for the LGBT Hollywood Community Center out here. And teaching adults is great. It's really not teaching them. We're really collaborating during that time, reading poems and talking about them, and I love it. But there's something about working with children that sparked so much energy in me. I would like to do it again. You know, I really would.
Well, before, you know, I don't have much more time, but let me pick one now. How about... you know, I like the idea of writing about something that's an everyday event, like everybody loves dinner. This is just a simple event that could happen to anybody, and you've taken it and turned it into a poem that really will, I think people will sit back and say, yeah, you know, I understand that. I understand where she's coming from. And it's really a joy to read. So will you do that one for me?
Of course. Everybody loves dinner. When I walk into my mother's house, I see a pot on the stove, high flame, charring the sides. She thinks she's boiling water, but the water has evaporated, like a ghost fleeing the scene, leaving the bottom scalded. A blackness that cannot be reversed. It was only a matter of months. You see, she was very careful in the kitchen, taught me the same. Check the pilot lights, smell for gas, unclutter the space where you cook. Simple things like this she taught me. So last week when I visited, when I saw the blue flame hugging the sides of that old pot, sitting too close to the Kleenex I'd handed her, sobbing as she watched TV. So much violence. Was it always like this? Sit down, darling. Let's eat. Everybody loves dinner. But there was no food. Nothing there to cook. I hadn't brought a thing. What was I thinking? But we smiled, held hands. I changed the channel. She told me she felt full and was ready for bed.
That poem says so much. It just, you know, as we lose people and as they sometimes lose moments in their life, when you read this poem, it puts it into perspective, and I think people will be moved by it and will think for themselves, am I doing the enough? Am I bringing that dinner? Am I there for them? So that, I think that's, well, all of the poetry in your book, I think, is wonderful. It's called "I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom." And Kim, I'm always so impressed with you. I want one day for you to come back and let's talk with your other hat on. not with your Easter bonnet. This one, I imagine you in your Easter bonnet, and twirling around.
Well, Patsy, it's always great to talk with you, and thank you for having me read my poems, some of them, and I really appreciate that, and I hope people get joy from poetry. There's so many great poets to read. So,
well, they should start with you if they're not into poetry. This is a good way to start because the poems will touch your heart and make you think, and you will not forget them. It's funny, for years after you read this book, if you look at your pot on the stove, you're going to think about this. So I think you've done a great job with this book. Where can people read more about you and find out more about you?
Well, you can look at my website, which is just www.kimdowerpoetry.com. And I, the book should be everywhere. The publication date actually is on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. And, of course, it's on Amazon, but it should also be in people's local independent bookstores. And, yeah, so just enjoy. There's a lot of my poems on my website that people can read. And
well, that's wonderful, Kim. And, again, as I said, we'll have you back, and then you're going to wear your other hat. I don't know what hat you will wear for talking about Kim from L.A. and your publicity business, because you are so wonderful and so famous in the publicity world. Everybody knows you. And I would love you to explain to my listeners some background and information about publicity, okay?
Absolutely. Anytime, Patsy. You know where to call me.
Okay.
And if you need a poem, just email me and I'll send you one. How's that?
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you so much, Kim Dower. And you can go to her website and look for this book. And I will also put the information up on my website. And it's a perfect book for Mother's Day. It's a perfect book all year round. Thank you again, Kim.
Thanks so much, Patsy.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Wow. This is what I'm telling all of you writers out there. And I was just having a conversation with a writer yesterday. I said, yeah, you know, what you wrote and what you showed me was very nice. But boy, oh boy, you should read some poetry because then you learn the value of words. But, you know, you got to take this whole thing seriously when you become a writer. There are so many things to learn. And next week, I'm going to play some more of Jim Lamb's literary gems. I didn't have a chance today, but there are elements of writing that you need to know. And so I'm going to have some more of those for you. And my website is it's getting there. It's almost done, but you can go and see it in progress. It's, of course, radio-joy on paper. And remember, Bill Larson is coming next week, and we're going to talk about intellectual property. So send me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com. And then, everybody, just remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So please start writing, like Carol J. Perry, who is going to be featured in today's Senior Magazine in the month of May. And she's going to be here April 26th to talk about Till Death, number 12 in her Witch City Mystery Series. My goodness! 12 in 7 years. She is a fantastic writer, but she is exactly what I tell everybody and what Mary Higgins Clark told everybody who wanted to write. Get up in the morning and start writing, and then say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Thank you for everything. You're fantastic. He saluted me, and I saluted him. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Oh, my goodness, you people up in the snow country, I'm sorry for you. Bye. Bye-bye now. Bye.